Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 465, featuring Tram Lee Jones, who is Vice President of Solutions and Creative over at Backlight. Backlight, as you may know, make a F-Track and several other tools as well. Really fascinating stuff. We are going to get into a little bit about what she does over at Backlight, but Tram actually has a fascinating career, as most people do who come onto the podcast. I think everyone actually has a really interesting past. And hers is not an exception. Just listen to her story about how she got her first job working on the Matrix. Yeah, on the Matrix. And you'll be surprised at how people can sort of land their first jobs and how that happened. So just goes to show you, you just never know. And really cool stuff. So you'll hear more about that on the podcast. But she comes from a very interesting background. She has a lot of experience in computer science. She's very creative. But more specifically, she's actually very good at communicating with people and getting ideas across and making sure things get done, which is how she sort of landed into the visual effects production side of things and has done some really amazing work in that area. And I think it's really important for people to sort of understand that skill set and understand the importance of visual effects production and why you know you need the specific skills that you do. That's something I actually really appreciate a great deal in that field as well. So she's now working over at Backlight and F-Track. She actually worked for Autodesk ShotGrid for a little bit, but now it's really interesting stuff in terms of what's going on in that space, and we learn a lot about that as well. Okay, I told you guys last week that there's actually some big projects I'm working on. I can't necessarily tell you just yet. We will be finding out more about in the next month or so. I'm very excited. I can't wait to unveil this to you guys. It's something big that I've been working on for a long time, almost 10 years, I will actually say, but it's very cool. So make sure and check us out. Go to chaos.com for more news on that as it comes out. But also when you go to chaos.com, we do have an announcements about a couple of products, and I want to make sure you guys know about that. We've done a V-Ray 6 update 2 for Houdini and for Maya, and there's been several updates on those, and you can just go to the site. But the one I want to sort of bring to light is actually Material X. We've been doing a lot of work in terms of updating those products to be compliant with things like USD and Material X, and there's a big Material X update that's happening in update 2. You guys should check that out and find out how exactly we implemented it, what we're doing with it, and we'd love to get your feedback if this is something that you guys are more and more interested about Material X. I'm probably going to do a podcast just dedicated to this with some of our product managers. So make sure and follow that as well. Okay. Besides our products, there's a couple of events going on. As you guys know, just go to chaos.com/events. We will be at the NVIDIA GTC conference in San Jose on March 18th through the 20th. That's GTC, the GPU Technology Conference, not GDC, which is the Game Developer Conference, where we've been doing a lot of work with, obviously, with NVIDIA and optimizing things on the GPU. A lot of work's been done in this area. Vlado's going to be there and be doing some stuff on that area. So if you happen to be at GTC, make sure and stop by and say hello and find out more about what is going on. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of news on Vantage as well. Okay, a couple of other things I want to let you guys know about. I think I told you guys at the end of last year that Nikos is doing a bunch of workshops on creative lighting, and that is continuing to happen. So if you'd like to know more about that, there'll be something in Berlin on March 20th and in Toronto on April 3rd. So if you want to know more about those workshops, just go to chaos.com/event. Again, chaos.com/event. Now, of course, if you want to know more about the podcast, you guys know what to do. Just go to our webpage, which is chaos.com/CG Garage Podcast. CG Garage. chaos.com/CG Garage. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast. And if you'd like to watch these podcasts, you're always welcome to do so on our YouTube, which is where we post all of our videos, including all of our podcasts. And that is youtube.com/chaosgroupTV. And for now, please enjoy episode number 465 with Tram Lee Jones.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, You need to make sure everything has Fernell.
Okay, so Tramp, we have we've run into each other at several events over the years. I think the last time I saw you was probably at the HPA last year. Last time we really were chatting. VS Awards, that's right. We saw, which was only last week. So I'm sorry about that.
All good.
It's all good. But yes, we did have a great chat, and this is why I told you to come on to the podcast, which is cool. But yeah, I'm very excited to hear about it because I know you've been doing this for a long time. You've seen many different facets of the industry, and you've worked in different parts and in parts that I think are interesting and different from a traditional artist perspective in some ways. But I'd love to know like what. What got you motivated to get into all of this? Where did you want to like get into the movie industry and work in high tech stuff?
So I always feel a little bad telling this story because so many people work so hard to get into the industry, and I kind of fell into it. I was originally a comp sci and math major in college. And I was graduating during the time of the dot-com bubble. So there's a lot of concerns about whether or not I even have a job when I would graduate. Right. So I ended up kind of taking my time. I'm like, all right, you know, let's delay graduation a year. So I actually did part-time in my last couple of years coming out of school. But during that, I said, okay, I have to find an internship. And I did something that most other college kids did back then, which was look for an internship on Craigslist. That's actually how I got into VFX.
Wait, where were you? What state were you living? Were you in California?
I was in California. Funny story with that. I really wanted to go to UCSD. My family's from San Diego originally. And I didn't get into UCSD, so I said, I'm going to go to community college and do a transfer. So I got into a bunch of other colleges, but I just wanted to go to that one. Well, by the time I got my transfer degree, I no longer wanted to go to UCSD.
Okay.
I originally was going to do computer engineering. I was actually more interested in hardware than I was in actual software programming. I ended up going computer science, and I picked San Francisco State. And again, it was one of those things. I'm like, dang it, you know, could have gotten in right after college or after high school, but
right.
Anyways, that's the path I took, and you know, I chose San Francisco State because I wanted to be in close proximity to Silicon Valley. And when I was comparing some of the universities, one of the things that struck me was that the professors at San Francisco State actually came from working in software. So a lot of them were professors at night, or you know, were professors that were working in software already. And I wanted like that hands-on experience, mm-hmm. Or being taught by somebody with hands-on experience. So yeah, that's how I ended up there, and I went up to the Bay Area specifically for that reason, and then poof. So that's it. Yeah, but it worked out. So Craigslist, I ended up working on, I worked as a systems admin intern for the Matrix Revolutions.
Oh, at Escape.
Yep.
So you got a job on Craigslist to work on the Matrix.
Yes, I did.
Okay. You know, that's going to make a lot of people really like, wait, what?
Yes. No, I know. It's crazy. But, and I had no idea. I mean, and also back then, I mean, I don't think it was that widely known yet, like what VFX was. It was starting to become known.
Right.
And more.
But wait, was this the first Matrix? This was the first Matrix? No.
This was the second. Yeah. One of the sequels.
Yeah, because the first one came out in 96. Six or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say it was late 90s. So I don't remember, but
okay.
Yeah. So this was early 2000s.
Right.
And, so I came in, and what was really funny was I said, how on earth did I get this job? seeing that, you know, I mean, I came in, I'm like, what everybody was doing was like, you know, jaw dropping, especially for me. I was a college student who had no idea all this stuff existed. What was really funny was my manager at the time, Tom Lafferty, said to me, you know, oh, part of it is because he's like, oh, you have retail experience. And I'm like, because I have retail experience.
Okay.
And he's like, you know how to deal with people. need somebody that knows how to deal with people. Because my job was going around.
Yeah, what was your responsibility?
Calibrating monitors.
Oh, right.
Calibrating monitors. I mean, at one point I had to stick asset tags on everything. You know, all the intern monkey work that you
The system person that walks around like, can I calibrate your monitor? Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, exactly. And it was back then, it was a really bad video game. Sometimes it took 5 minutes, sometimes it took 30. I did patch PBX phone systems. I remember taking down the whole producer wing one day. Oops, patched the wrong cables.
Right.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I love the people and I love the passion. So.
And you got to see hands-on what a functioning visual effects studio was like, right?
Yes. I say yes because I'm like, we all function, right? Well, obviously we get movies out the door, and it was one of those that I remember. There was so much passion for what people did and how much people cared. And to be honest, for me, what was really astounding for me was just the bonds people created throughout the process.
Right. Yeah. Do you remember working with people like Jonathan Litt or any of those guys?
Yes, I do.
Stephen Parker.
Yes, I do. It's funny. So, for a while afterwards, there was a little, there was a little group. I think we had like a group, email that we would keep in touch and things like that. But, over the years, we still see each other around. So it's really fun to see. And I think especially for people who back then knew me, because I was the intern. So it's always kind of fun. I'm like, yeah, I was the intern. Remember, I used to calibrate your monitor.
Right.
We get to see other folks.
Okay. Obviously that got your foot in the door, which is in those days was the most important part of of anything, right? Where did you go from there?
So from there, I think, after the sequels finished, there was a couple of other projects that came through the door, and I stuck around for a little bit, and I did part time. And I, at one point I was, I was like, heck, I'll be a free intern because this is fun to be here. Mm-hmm. Because I was still finishing up school, and while I was in school, I think I had like three jobs anyway, so I was keeping myself busy. Afterwards I said, all right, well, I don't have to stay in VFX. I'll look for another role. But what I found was nobody was responding to my resume except VFX studios.
Right.
Because once you're in, it's, you stick out. And I was like, well, hey, I don't mind. I mean, it was a great experience and I would love to learn more about it. And I did go and interview at a couple of other places that were non-VFX, but none of them excited me.
Right.
From
escape to working in an accounting firm would probably be very different, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I think I started realizing was, I think it was just going into the interview, even the interviews felt different, if I'm being honest. I'm talking to everybody who's a creative and they're excited about what they do and they're passionate and they're highly detailed, which I think is also one of my skill sets is I like being highly detailed. So it all worked out. Afterwards, my next job, I ended up working at R&H.
Oh, okay.
And I was there for a very short stint, and then I went over to DD, which is actually, I think, where you and I first crossed paths.
I think so, yeah. What were you working on?
I was in systems. Remember, carrying all the monitors.
Yeah, you were. That's right. I was, and so it must have been during my first run there, so probably around 2004 or something like that.
Yeah, 2000. Okay. I was there 2004, 2005.
So it was like some iRobot stealth was going on. Yeah, stealth. So yep, that's where I was. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. I always joke about that time because I would do the dual monitor and dual computer setups, and back then without the CRTs, or back then it was the CRTs, and I could wrap my arms around. Yes, they were like 50, 60 pounds each. And yeah. I could only lift the 20-inch monitors. The 21-inch was just a little too wide. I couldn't actually lift it.
They're so heavy.
Time I'm like, ugh. It was always the compositors. Compositors wanted the 21-inch monitor set up. And I'm like, I need help. Somebody needs to put this on a cart for me. I can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I remember it was, I think it was on Stealth, or it might have been on iRobot. I mean, just to put people's perspective on this, like CRT monitors had to be calibrated, right? Because there are emissions and they had to be calibrated like once a month. And you had a big probe on there, et cetera, because they would shift due to electrostatic magnetic forces of the world. Right. And so, and then I remember at one point, you know, the key to keeping them calibrated is not turning them off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then there's someone who was like high and mighty, was like, we're going to save the planet, went around and turned off every monitor in our on our stage.
Oh.
Because like, I'm going to save the planet and turned off every monitor. Now, everyone's monitor had to be recalibrated. It took down everyone for like so long to be up and running again.
Oh, man. Yeah. Luckily, I did not have to do any monitor calibration there, but right. I definitely empathize because that escape, that's exactly what I did day in and day out. All yep. I did was monitor calibration yep. for a while.
I used to love it. They had a DD that, you know, was like a big probe with a suction cup thing on the monitor, and it had this tape on there. It looked like they were going through like physical therapy. They keep
this
it on.
Therapy for monitors.
Yeah. It was kind of funny. It was kind of funny. Okay. So after DD, what was your next stint?
It was Sony ImageWorks.
Oh, okay. I went there too, right after the Stealth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody did. It was like 1,100 people and 13 shows.
Uh-huh.
It was bananas.
Yep.
So yeah, I went over as a PST production services technician. So the render farm, you know, writing small pipeline tools,
right.
You know, kind of the whole shebang. And it was a lot of fun. It was, you know, I built a lot of relationships there. I think I was there for 4 years, and then I went into, so first off I said, what do I want to do in this industry? Cause I didn't want to stay in systems, and I didn't realize I didn't want to keep headphones on all day and code. Mm-hmm. As you can tell, I'm far too outgoing for that. I need people stimulation.
Right. Right. And you were getting some of that at your first job when working at Escape, when you had to walk around to people's desks and help them. Right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then, so, you know, while I was at ImageWorks, they actually had a really great training program at the time. So I took advantage of it, took all the courses. I said, oh, maybe I'll be an artist. So, you know, I learned how to, you know, how to model, how to animate, how to light and how to comp, learned about, you know, courses on color space, learned about, you know, trying to learn everything I could. And then at the mm-hmm. end of it, I said, I don't want to do any of this. I'm going to go into production. I'm going to take all this knowledge and I'm going to go into
production. But that's great. That's great because at least you understood conceptually how all of that works, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of how I started seeing it. I said, all right, well, maybe I'll go in production and I'm just a little bit different because I have a computer science degree and now I've learned how the entire workflow of, you know, VFX production, you know, how it gets made.
Right.
So, yeah, I went in and my first project was Spider-Man 3.
All right.
And yeah. And what was really funny was I was the very first, it was like 2006, and I was the very first farm out coordinator. So it was the very beginning of outsourcing, you know, to other facilities. And at that time, I don't think anybody knew what outsourcing, how much overhead it was. In hindsight, I had to work with 13 vendors and 700 shots that went through me for my first stint in production.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a lot. Funny, my supervisor that I worked with back then, Blaine, I ran into him at VES Awards, and we're just talking about that. We're like, yeah, back then when we didn't know how much work that was going to be.
Yep. Yeah, so. That's true. But yeah, that's interesting. So outsourcing, and then you call it farming out, or what did you call it?
Yeah, back then we didn't call it outsourcing. Back then we called it farm out. I was like, my title was farm out coordinator. It wasn't my signature.
Wow, that's really funny. Farm out. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So which vendors were you working with at the time?
Oh man, trying to remember them all. Cafe FX was a large one.
Okay.
There's two in India. One was Tata, which became a part of ImageWorks later, I believe.
Okay.
I want to say FutureWorks was another one in India. I'm trying to remember all the different names now. There was also Tweak. Where else? Man.
All right. And that was your first stint in the production side of things, right? So after all that training.
Yes. Furious FX was in
Furious.
One.
Okay. Yeah.
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 I'm trying to remember because so many of them aren't necessarily around anymore.
Right. Right. But I mean, so this was really cool. So you got to be able to see sort of like not only how your production works, but how other people's productions work too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. One of my roles being a coordinator back then was ensuring everything came back exactly the way we asked them to.
Right.
It was not always the case. Right. So, you know, I think usually like I would be kind of first level QC. I'm like, all right. Oh, you didn't name your shots right. Kick it back.
Right.
Just because I, you know, at least at the time, and I think it might still be like that today, you know, ImageWorks is a very strict naming convention when things get submitted.
Yeah, for sure. It was a machine. When I was there, I mean, like you said, there were 13 shows, and it was such a well-oiled machine that my job was ridiculously simple. You know, it was almost, I hate to say it, almost boring. Because there was no, it was almost hard to fail there because everything kind of went the way it did. In fact, I remember at one point, and you know this probably for sure, when I submitted something and you submitted something wrong in the shot or you forgot some setting, instead of saying, oh, you did this wrong, you got to go back and fix it, someone from the render team said, I opened your scene file, fixed it, and resubmitted it for you. That would be you.
Yes. PST groups. That's exactly what we, those are things.
I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And that's kind of like, it felt like going into, you know, when you get bumped up to first class in the plane, it's like, oh, wait a minute. I get free drinks. This is amazing.
Yes. Well, it was also, you know, I mean, from the PST perspective, it was actually really great because it gave us the opportunity to learn and, you know, kind of feel more a part of the process.
Yes.
When you're kind of in that room, you're watching the render queue, you're programming, you might be QCing some of the stuff that comes through. But you know, you're not as involved in the day-to-day, you know, you're not involved in dailies. You're not involved in like what the director notes are. So there's a, sure. there's, you know, you don't, that's our way of feeling a little bit more attached to the project, you know?
Right. Right. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So was that your first job? Did you continue working at Sony after that job?
Yes, I went on. It was one of those. Now I'm trying to remember what projects I worked on there. I ended up staying there for about 4 years. I remember clearly I was on the second version of Hotel Transylvania, the original okay. one. And yep. then I was on. Oh, wait. Once I went into production, yeah, it was Spider-Man 3, Hotel Transylvania, and then I went into G-Force. And G-Force was the last project I did there.
Okay.
And I was resource manager. So then I, you know, set up the config file for the show and helped, you know, which version of Maya are we using? What version of ItView are we using? You know, worked with the PSTs on render management. So.
Right. Yeah. So. All right. Well, you really know the guts of how things work in a studio, even a really big studio, which is pretty cool.
Well, what was interesting is that after that, I kind of see what you were saying about like things were a little bit boring. It's like when you're at a studio that large, you kind of have to be a well-oiled machine, right?
Right.
You know, especially back then it was more typical to see a studio do something like, you know, 1500 shots, I mean, or 2000 shots or whatever.
Right.
And at the time, I remember, I think G-Force was the largest show we had at the facility for that time. I mean, today, I think it definitely is no longer the case. But, you know, seeing how ridiculously detailed you have to be to make sure everything goes as smoothly and as quickly as possible and as predictable as possible, especially when you're looking at trying to meet delivery deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, I wanted to kind of expand and do a little bit more. So I actually left and I went to Method.
Oh, okay.
Very different. I started off as like their facility side DPM.
Was this before or after the merger with Riot?
Right after. It was like within 9 months.
Okay. So that's right when I left Method. I left Method to go to DD at that time.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I also had a couple stints where I almost went back to DD. I feel like everybody probably at least went back or almost went back.
Okay.
But yeah, so I went to Method. I kind of similar type of role of like, you know, resource management, except it was at a facility level. And then, you know, I kind of said, you know, I kind of want to be on the show side. You know, I want to do more of the show stuff. So they put me on some shows. I learned commercials really, really fast. So I'm I went from Sony Imageworks to like, here's a 30-second commercial you had to deliver in 3 weeks. It was
Who were you working with, like Leighton Greer or who?
I sat in the same office with Leighton, but I was working with Stephanie Gilgar.
Oh yeah, Stephanie.
We had I think I worked on quite a few shows with her because they were starting to spin up the features part that was one of the reasons why I was hired because I came from features.
Right. So like Janelle Kershaw was there and a bunch. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Janelle was the one that brought me there. That's right.
Janelle was the one who brought you there?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. I love Janelle.
I love Janelle too. Her and I, we became such good friends at DD. We both attended each other's weddings.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
awesome. I just saw her at the VES and I was so excited for her with John Wick 4. And so she's been on this podcast a couple of times too. So she's great. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, I saw. Which is amazing. I love Janelle. I absolutely love Janelle. We worked on quite a few projects together. Actually, she was the VFX soup on one of my most memorable projects in my career. Which was working on a short called I'm Here.
Oh, okay.
The Spike Jonze short that he made before he made Her, which was his inspiration for Her.
Yeah, Janelle and Spike seem to get along really well, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that was the project where they kicked off their working relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that was intense. That was my very first producer credit. It was a lot, but it was also amazing. Again, you know, kind of the friendships you've built, the people you come across. I still keep in touch with many of those people today. And we ended up, I forget how many shots. I want to say it was like 300 shots because I think it started off being a much smaller scope. And then the scope expanded. It became a 30-minute short. And we had a team in the Method team in LA working on it and the Method team in New York working on it. And I ended up moving to New York and helping to set up that facility for features out there. So that was the project where I was going back and forth. And then after that project, I moved up to New York for a few years.
Well, okay. Who was in New York at that time? Was Pink there?
Yes. Pink was there. Pink was there at my CG suit. Yep. Yeah.
See, I know. I can knew that landscape real good.
Yes. And our ECD, Aaron Hartson, who is now at Frame Store.
He's
and
now at Frame Store.
Yeah, exactly. He and I worked together again afterwards at Frame Store.
He's really cool. He's been on this podcast too, which has been amazing. So Janelle brought you onto that project. Tell us a little bit more about that because I'd love to hear anything Spike Jonze. Personally, I want to know, like, what was it like? What was he like?
Oh my gosh. It's so funny. He's one of those directors that I always say is probably hands down, probably my most favorite director that I've worked with as a producer. He was always so humble, willing to like roll up sleeves and help. And I remember, so in the short, there were like two robot characters. I can't remember the girl's name anymore, but the boy robot, the male robot, his name was Sheldon, and he had this flat face, right? And you have these like little, you know, openings for the eyes, and you had to animate, you had to animate expression on a hard surface.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I'm sure, you know, it's like, that's really difficult. How do you get facial expression when you don't have any muscles to animate around the eye and it's all eyebrow and like, you know, like minor lid movement? And he, like Spike Jonze would always be really amazing. Like he would say, okay, for this shot, this is the emotion I want. And he's like, bring out a camera. And he would just shoot reference for you right there. And he would like act it out. And he was phenomenal at it.
Really?
It was so great. Yeah. You like, he, you know, and we would, you know, our animation team would say, hey, can we get Spike to do some reference for this other thing? And he would just say, oh yeah, sure. I'll come on down. Let's do it right away.
That's so cool. And he knew exactly what you guys needed to make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That's really super nice because there's a lot of people that just don't know how to give feedback and then just sort of put it in your hands and like, I want this. And they give you some vague word and you're supposed to figure out how to interpret what they said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was really good about being clear about right. what he wanted. And, you know, the other memorable moment for me was, I think it was like right before Christmas. Cause as you know, you just basically take Christmas Day off and the next day you're right back at it.
Uh-huh.
So I think it was Christmas Eve. And we were doing a dailies review, with him, and I was in New York. So he was in New York as well. And he came to the studio. We did a review and he was just like, kind of like curled up in a ball. And we're like, Spike, are you okay? And he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. You guys need me. I need to give feedback. I need to give feedback. I'm like, well, I mean, if you're not feeling good, you know, it's okay. We could probably, you know, wait a couple days. He's like, no. And he sat there, was like determined to like, you know, we were like, okay, something's wrong. He comes back a couple days later. He said, oh yeah, sorry. I had food poisoning. I'm like, why did you show up? Like you can stay home, but yeah. not that I want to encourage somebody coming in, but that was the passion he had for yeah. this project. You know,
absolutely. Yeah. So I have my other podcast, Martini Giant, that you may know, but we talked about Spike Jonze on her and we're like, love his work. And part of us is like, just why doesn't he do more? <You know? laughs> And I think he just does what he wants to do and he does it with conviction and with, you know, the care that he feels that that project deserves. And then if he doesn't feel like he's going to get that care, he's not going to do the project, right?
Yeah.
He's amazing.
And that was, you know, that made that project so memorable. And that type of, that passion really, you know, spread,
right.
you know, through the project. And I think everybody else felt that passion and everybody else wanted to, you know, do their best.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it starts, that's where it starts, right?
That's awesome. How long were you on that? Do you remember how long that project lasted?
Oh man, that was 3 months. 3 months.
Oh my God.
And it was
three months for a half hour short. Oof.
Yeah. Yes. And I think I want to say that I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. I think the total number of people on the project was somewhere about 120 between both coasts. And, I will say I remember very vividly starting my day at 10 a.m., ending at 3 a.m. every day for 6-7 days a week for at least the last month, maybe month and a half, 2 months even.
Right.
But, you know, again, it's like it's you become so passionate about it. You want to get it done. You want to make sure everybody has everything they need. And, yeah, it was a good time.
Well, just what you just said, you know, is this testament, I think, to that, because I think that's you just explained how you that was your favorite project. And yet you also explained how it was a huge amount of hours. So you're not going to give if you give those hours, but you love giving them, then it's a different experience than giving those hours and working on, let's say, stealth, right? Let's just pretend like someone else here worked on stealth for hours similar to that, and then you get stealth at the end, right? So
it's so funny that I remember having to work a lot of weekends for stealth too.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Like, wait, what? there's a giant green cloud that explodes. That's like, that just didn't make any sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
but anyway, yeah, that's funny. But no, that's such a cool project. That sounds so amazing. I'm really, thank you for sharing that. That was awesome. So how long were you at Method for?
I was at Method for about 2 years. So okay. I went out there. I ended up moving out there right after wrapping up on I'm Here. And then I did more work in commercials because it was, because in New York, that was primarily what we were doing,
sure.
At least for VFX work. But we were also trying to do more work in feature films because at that time, there was kind of a surgence of that. So then I moved on to other projects. I think I did a lot of small ones. So I did Tower Heist was our biggest one. And then we did Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close. Being Flynn, a couple of other smaller ones, but it was always really interesting because as we were growing, especially growing that presence in New York and in the facility, I remember at one point I think I had 4 features and 3 commercials I was producing, and then I bid another 3
at the same time.
So, yeah. Yes, at the same time.
Wow.
So my plate was definitely very full, but it was kind of to what we said before. It's like it was good times that I remembered, and all the people that I work with, it's like I still have a great relationship with. In fact, that's actually how I met my husband.
Yeah. At Method?
He and I worked together. Yes, at Method. He and I worked together. So, it's a good, memorable time.
Right. So. Right. Not uncommon for people to meet in those circumstances.
Yes, exactly. Where else do you go when you're working about 100 hours?
Yeah. It's like, oh, there's someone I'm in the trenches with.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. So you're not going to get mad at me because I'm working till 3 a.m., right? Because you're working till 3 a.m.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So where did you go from Method?
So afterwards, we actually moved back to LA. We moved back to LA together. I ended up freelancing. So when I came back, I wanted to start working in features again because I was like, all right, now that I understand commercials. And I'll say that my time in commercials was very humbling because I learned a completely different skill set. Even though I understood how VFX got made, trying to do that for a 30-second commercial in 3 weeks is a whole different ballgame. And you may utilize some of the similar artists, but just so different. But I also then learned kind of the wider, bigger production process, like having to work closely with production, being on set, working with the DI, that whole process. So that was really good.
Right.
So when I came back to LA, I wanted to get back into feature film, but at that point, feature film was moving away from LA. So really what I had left was working in commercials, which was fine. I enjoyed it and continued to do a lot of work in that space. And, but the one thing I did miss was I did kind of miss that, when you're working on a long project together, that kind of camaraderie you get.
Yeah.
That was one thing that I felt like I didn't have as much of. There were times where I did have that because some of those commercials were as long as features.
Or sometimes you have a commercial campaign that goes on for like a year or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I went on to a couple different places. I freelanced around. I was at The Mill for a while. I was at... it used to be called Brewster Parsons, now called Kevin VFX, I believe. A place called Stardust, which is now Lost York. I was at Mass Market, which is PSYOP.
Yep.
I was at Logan, and then I went to Framestore, and I ended up taking a full-time position at Framestore and became their second staff producer. Because they were just opening the office at the time.
Oh, right. In Culver City, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, of course, the person that brought me in was Aaron.
Aaron. Right. I was going to say it was Aaron that probably got you there. Okay.
Yeah.
And did you meet Ben West? Was he there too at that point?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he was there. He was there. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, he and I worked, we ended up working really well together. I'll admit, I think initially, I don't think we got along as well at the end. I mean, when I left, he wrote the most heartwarming 2-page, like, goodbye letter to me.
Really?
Yes. Man, I that place.
He is an interesting character. Like, you know, he grew up like in strange places. You know, I think like Papua New Guinea, like growing anyone who grew up in Papua New Guinea is going to be like, you know, and his shorts are fabulous. Like his sushi short was really good. Fugo and Taco, I think was the name of that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was it. I bet if he's listening, he's probably like, what do you mean we didn't
Well, I think he's a very charismatic person and very, but I also think he's also a very handsome man. I'll tell you that, you know, but, I also think he's secretly very shy in some ways.
Well, you know, I realize, I think a part of it is that, I think a lot of it was just getting used to like kind of my style of working when I'm a producer. And I think we all go through that, right? When you first start working with somebody new in production, it's like you're kind of figuring them out and you're like, okay, you know, what can I expect? And then you kind of realize, I'm like, oh yeah, most of the time it's like what you see is what you get.
Right.
You know, most people are just like, we're just trying to get our work done. But we had some really awesome projects together and we built such a great rapport. I mean, he trusted me so much at the end. And I remember there were times where he's like, oh, Tram, you can take a look at that. And, you know, oh, you can review that and send it to client. I'm like, no, I'm not the VFX soup. You're the soup. You're going to go look at that. I'm not going to look at that.
Okay. how long were you at Framestore? You said for a couple of years there?
Yeah, I was there for 2 years. Yeah, I was there for 2 years. Loved my time there. I mean, if I'm going to stay somewhere, I'm going to stay there because I love it. So, you know, any place that I'm speaking to generally, it's like I'm going to say the same thing. Like there were some amazing people and amazing talent. But yeah, I was there for 2 years. It was right around the time when they won the award for Gravity.
Right.
And in commercials, as soon as somebody wins a visual effects award for something, every commercial wants you to do the same thing. So I had to do a lot of astronaut commercials.
Yep.
Then I went, then from there, you know, if I'm being honest at that point, I was like, I'm really tired of the long late hours. And
right.
You know, at that time, you know, I had just gotten married and I was like, you know, I want to think about a family and how do you do this work while having a family? And then a opportunity crossed my path, which was going to work for Autodesk and working on Shotgun. Mm-hmm. And so I went through and it was a remote opportunity, too. And this was in 2015. So I was able to work fully remote working from home.
Right.
So, I went ahead and, you know, interviewed, as I was interviewing, I had there was a little bit of a health issue I found out. So I suddenly lost my hearing, couldn't figure out why, never had any issues like that before, then was diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Wow.
And that was 4 days before I received my job offer from Autodesk. So I said, this is an omen. I think it's time to make a change in my life.
Right.
So, and not only that, but like one of my big reasons for wanting to go into software was, knowing how much time we spend in visual effects. I'm still very passionate about the industry, but it can be really hard. It can be really hard on families and relationships and things like that. And I've kind of always thought to myself, I'm like, if software can help alleviate some of it. I don't think software will ever get rid of the overtime. Because again, it's the passion, right? It's like,
sure,
you want to make something look good. You're going to spend the time to craft it. But can you reduce that so it's not so much? So those were all the reasons I said, you know, it's where I want to go. I want to kind of make some changes. And obviously something in my life is telling me it's time for me to make a change. So went over to Autodesk, and I was actually there for about 6.5 years.
Okay.
And then after Autodesk, I joined F-Track. And so, or it was F-Track at the time. It was, now we are Backlight. So we're all under one umbrella with 5 different products.
Okay.
And now I'm also learning some new challenges as well in my new role here.
Well, cool. Okay. So give us a little bit of an idea. Obviously, I people in the visual effects industry, I'm sure, know F-Track and Shotgrid pretty well, and they understand what it is. But for this is a we have a pretty wide variety of people that use to listen to this podcast. So give people an idea of what that process is and how does it work.
So both products are products that are centered around production management.
Right.
And saying production management is kind of loose because realistically, you're managing the entire workflow. It's like, how does something get done? How does a shot get started? How does it get finished? You're tracking the tasks that happen on all phases of it. You can start it from, you can start super early on, or you can just work on it in post. And I think what's really interesting is that, a lot of times when we're talking about production management, people don't realize that in production management, there's so much more complexity there than it seems. I think people just say, oh, it's just project management. It's like project management, but there's a lot of nuance to it. You know, when you're scheduling, you need to understand what comes first, what comes next. Can you do things in parallel? Can you optimize so that you're working a little bit more efficiently? Mm-hmm. And I think what's also really interesting that, you know, bits that I think most people also don't know is that for these types of tools in production management, you're catering to a very diverse audience because you have to have a strong API to then, you know, oh man, I got the little thumb. The API has to be able to do all the things that Pipeline TV would need. Mm-hmm. And then you have producers who are not always, you know, technical and it, are more focused on the UI and, you know, sort of the business analytics, you know, on the show. And then, of course, you have the creatives who are looking at the pixels and the work. So there's a lot there, I'll say, and we can go into that for quite a while too. In my opinion, I feel like the more you kind of track that stuff and kind of keep on top of that information,
sure,
you make better decisions along the way, and hopefully those decisions lead to a project that is much more clear in scope, clear in delivery, and hopefully not as heavy in, you know, long nights, late hours, and weekends.
Sure. Well, it's a lot of dependencies have to be tracked, right? One thing depends,
yes,
on the next, and it's sort of a different approach to making sure that everything works. You know, I remember as a VFX supervisor, I remember many days just sitting in front of the shot board, like, did this get done? Did this get done? Did this get done? Because now we can move forward, you know? So that was the tricky parts of all of that stuff that I think was interesting. And I think it's really interesting that those tools took place. But what I'm interested in actually is, you know, based on that, I mean, I think what's happening more recently is because of things like virtual production, right, that's happened more recently, and people are working in collaborative tools, and there's a different style of collaboration or project management that people are working with, and they have to look at things like, you know, game engines that are now part of it, and they have to use things like Perforce in order to try to sync everything up. That's very challenging. I mean, how do you think certain studios manage that kind of process of changing the way they think about dependencies and things like that?
It depends on who you ask, but very slowly.
Right.
I think that it's really interesting because I think some people dive right into it and they get really excited about it. The
sure.
smaller studios obviously are more nimble, so they can do that really quickly and they can try and test things out. And then obviously the larger studios, it takes a bit more. What I find is that, you know, even though it seems like, I mean, we've talked about virtual production for a while, there are a few workflows, I'll say, out there. Yep. And it's a little bit different each time. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're quite in a place where we can say there's kind of even a lot of commonality yet, but I think sure. that there are some things that are, it is a very different way of thinking. So, you know, I've talked about this with our teams too, you know, here, it's like, how do you write integration tools for something like this, where people are still kind of defining what that looks like.
Right.
But I find it really interesting to, you know, we try to partner a lot with our clients and as well as like other software vendors who, you know, use tools in that space or create tools in that space so that we can stay close to that market and help them along the way. And especially right now, well, not exactly right now, but, you know, in this time frame where people are still, you know, considering it, it's a fun challenge to try and help contribute to solving.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is an interesting process to how that works. I think there's going to be lots of ways. I actually think there's going to be a hybrid approach to be able to work on these things, because I think there's a disjointedness between a traditional visual effects process and the process of virtual production, where you're bifurcating your project management and your pipeline and everything, and it just one doesn't like live the other. So I think it'd be interesting to see how people manage it so that they all work together again. And I think that finding a way to organize assets and organize ideas and would in a singularity rather than one thing for one solution and another thing for another solution, and then you separate. It's just be good to think about that.
Yeah, I think too, you know, it's funny, I feel like we talk about virtual production, but I feel like virtual production has really been happening for a long time before we even gave it a name, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like I saw more or bits and pieces of it inside of commercials, because mm-hmm. for the sheer, you know, time frame that you have, it's so short, like you don't have time to split off. It's like, no, everybody get in a room together and we're locking the door until we figure out how to solve this. Yeah. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. And that's kind of the fun part, right?
That was one thing that I didn't get at Sony, right? Like everyone just sat at their desk and did their job, and they did a great job, but there was no opportunities to like, oh no, we've got 3 weeks, go from zero.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say I was kind of joke, like I kind of ebb and flow between both.
Right.
Like I like a lot of structure, and I like a lot of like, okay, you know, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. But you know, you do it for a while and it gets a little bit boring, and then it's like, okay, I need a little bit of chaos. And it's like, threw myself into commercials and it was like, all right, we're going to just roll up our sleeves and everybody's going to pitch in and we're going to get it done.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think it's awesome to do that. So let's see, real quickly, what do you see as some of the trends that are happening in that space? Do you see a lot of interesting ideas in terms of how things get organized, how people are workflows? Do you see that changing? Like, where are we going with this?
You know, I think that it's an interesting question, and I'll be honest, at least in virtual production in particular, I don't really know, just because, you know, with the last half of the year, there hasn't been a lot of conversation around that, because there hasn't been a lot of, you know, work production around that. But yeah, there hasn't been a lot of production. Yeah.
Right.
But I'm hopeful that people will start thinking of it that way. But, you know, that all said, it's like, I think there is some concerns of, you know, not maybe concerns is the wrong word, but there is some, you know, curiosity around AI. What does that do to feature production? And in my opinion, with that, I think we'll know more about where that's going to go soon. Mm. But I also think that, you know, we went through a big transition when we went from hand-drawn animation to digital, right?
Right.
And this is another transition we're going to go through. And even with that, I mean, it took a little bit of time.
Sure.
I know AI has come faster than we expected, but I still think it may take some time. I mean, who knows? A year from now, I could be proven wrong. But I think there's so much technology that's coming out. If I'm being honest, like, things are kind of surprising me every day that, I don't know, maybe ask me that question again in a year.
We'll see. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, the tools, just because there's so many new tools doesn't mean that we have a workflow for them yet, because the other thing that happens is whatever you're using one thing AI has taught us is whatever we just learned today is obsolete tomorrow. So what's the point of making a pipeline on something that's going to be obsolete right away, right? So us trying to learn the process and what's going to stick and what's not going to stick is going to be challenging, especially when it comes to those types of things.
Right. But I think it's important that we embrace whatever comes our way because,
oh, sure.
And not be afraid of it, you know, because otherwise, if we're afraid of it, then we're going to miss out on opportunities where we can contribute to making things better.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting. People are very, you know, being very cautiously optimistic, I feel, in this way. Some people are not optimistic at all and very negative, but I don't think that they're actually taking the time to see the bigger picture and how it has affected them. You know, like you said, you know, I remember way back in early 2000s or late 90s when people were very, very upset about the fact that people could do visual effects on a regular PC and they didn't need an SGI to do it because they thought they were going to take their jobs away by doing it on a PC that you could buy at Best Buy, you know? And that was like, that's taking my job away. I learned on an SGI and my job is special. Yeah. And that was like, wow. So I'm not necessarily saying it's the same parallel to the AI tools, but I'm saying that there is definitely something to be thought of. We've gone through similar ideas in the past. So.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I think, you know, there was a time I remember, you know, we start talking more about virtual production and VR and AR and like, oh, that's going to change everything. And,
yeah, right.
You know, yeah, we're still here.
So some still did, some did and some didn't. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's coming up again now. Apple's brought a new device on board. Yeah. So all of a sudden, wait a minute, we're having this discussion. I thought we had this 10 years ago.
I know. It's really funny. I think I had this, and I feel like I had this discussion just 3 years ago.
Right.
I was talking to someone where I said, I was mentioning, I remember when I was working at Framestore and we started looking at like kind of VR and we were doing some VR projects. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there was like a lot of talk about it. And then it kind of got quiet. And then suddenly like, oh, people are talking about VR again. And so we're talking about it. And then I kind of went quiet. And then now the Apple stuff came out. It's like, oh.
Yeah, but there's not enough of those being sold and they're very expensive to really justify a huge market on it, but we'll see.
We'll see what, maybe they'll make it more affordable. I don't know.
Right. I also think that everyone, whenever something VR comes out, they look at the path of least resistance, which is make a movie in VR. And they keep proving the fact that movies in VR are not a thing every time.
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
I mean, you may be able to have a screen in VR and look at a movie there because that's a third person experience. But being in a VR movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. It's funny. So I had this conversation with my husband and he's very he loves watching movies. I'll admit I have a little bit of PTSD about going to a movie theater. Because I spent so many hours in a movie theater taking notes, like at ImageWorks, being the PM or the coordinator taking notes for like 8 to 10 hours a day in a dark theater.
Right.
I still get a little bit of that when I'm in a movie theater. But for him, he loves going to the movies. And for him, he's like going to the movies is actually about kind of sharing that common experience. Mm-hmm. So if you're putting on a kind of so his explanation of that to me, makes me kind of think like, well, but then you're watching a movie with a headset. If you're just watching it and not in it, just watching it, you don't have that same interaction. You know, it's a very different experience. So I don't know how enjoyable that can be. I mean, sure, we can watch movies all the time by ourselves.
Yeah, it's a very personal, it's only a solitary experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, I don't know, that's just very different.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, listen, it's very cool what you're doing. I love your history. You've obviously touched on so many parts of the industry and worked in so many different areas and different things. And obviously, you know, your experience in stuff like ShotGrid and F-Track are really, really cool as well. Really great talking to you. Thanks so much for doing this. And hopefully I will see you again real soon at some other event. It's always good running into you.
Yes, likewise, same. Thanks for having me. I really feel honored that you invited me to come here.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It's my honor as well.